could ask for more. Here is a land full of power and glory, beauty that words cannot recall. All her power shall rest on the strength of her freedom, glory shall rest on us all. Yet she's only as rich as the poorest of the poor, only as free as a padlocked prison door, only as strong as our love for this land, only as tall as we stand, for here is a land full of power and glory.
Ken, Star, how do you sleep at night? The perfect tool of the radical right. You think it's over now, we indict you for the death of democracy. By a powerful few. Independent counsel, independent of who? It sounds pretty good, if only true.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Allegations that the Kroger Company, owner of the Ralph's grocery store chain, illegally hired locked-out workers during a major strike in Southern California earlier this year may have merit. Kroger and the U.S. Justice Department both confirm an investigation has begun into the accusations, which reportedly involved hiring members of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union under the names and social security numbers of their children. This comes nearly half a year after the UFCW filed a lawsuit in a California court asking for the practice to be probed. That suit was dismissed as part of the strike settlement in February. But a grand jury is now hearing evidence collected so far, and Ralph's executives and store managers who took part in the scheme may face both state and federal criminal charges. In addition, if these claims can be proven, those workers who were locked out could receive back pay in the form of unemployment benefits denied during the dispute.
A Supreme Court ruling on Monday weakened state patient protection laws throughout the country. Two patients argued that Texas patient protection laws allowed them to pursue large lawsuits in their state court. Part of the suit was brought by a hysterectomy patient who claimed that Cigna Healthcare of Texas evicted her from a hospital after only one day. A doctor had recommended a longer stay, but the HMO refused to pay for it. The Supreme Court did not rule on whether she received appropriate care or not, simply stating that such lawsuits should be brought to the federal level.
Yesterday, the former chairman and CEO of media giant Vivendi Universal was arrested by French police. Jean-Marie Messier has been implicated in an investigation involving the manipulation of Vivendi's stock price, but he's yet to be formally charged. Also on Monday, Vivendi's video games unit announced it would lay off 350 people, more than one-third of its workforce, part of what it calls a division-wide restructuring.
Berkeley, California recently joined a growing list of cities with living wage ordinances designed to raise employees' salaries to match the actual cost of living. Opponents of the move argued before the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that living wage laws violate the U.S. Constitution's prohibition on legislative interference with valid contracts. But in a 2-1 ruling, the court disagreed.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Trouble's coming to the not-so-friendly skies. The Federal Aviation Administration is considering raising the retirement age of air traffic controllers to 56 because it predicts a major staffing crunch sometime during the next 9 years. Nearly half the controllers currently on the job will be able to retire by then. Ironically, many in this group are those who replaced the 12,000 air traffic controllers fired by Ronald Reagan in 1981 as part of his successful drive to break their union.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
It's always good to get reassurances from high government officials on issues of great concern to the people. Take the nagging issue of U.S. corporations offshoring hundreds of thousands of well-paying high-tech jobs out of our country, the very jobs we were told would be our people's ticket into the middle class. But now, the CEOs of Dell, Microsoft, IBM, and the rest are shipping these engineering and programming jobs off to India, Russia, and other locales where they can pay a third or a fourth or even a tenth of the middle-class pay scale in the U.S. Hey, they say, America's a great place, but we're going to go where we can fatten our bottom lines. This self-serving betrayal of America's middle class has, to put it nicely, annoyed many, many Americans. This is where Colin Powell steps in. Bush's Secretary of State recently sought to reassure the people on this issue of offshoring. Unfortunately, the people he reassured were in India. On a recent trip there, he promised that the Bushites would do nothing to stop the outsourcing of U.S. high-tech jobs to India and, indeed, would oppose all congressional efforts to stop it. He even posed as an economic philosopher, declaring that, quote, outsourcing is a natural effect of the global economic system, adding adamantly that you're not going to eliminate outsourcing. Well, we're certainly not going to eliminate it if our government won't fight for our people. Oh, but Powell said, while these kinds of dislocations will take place, the Bushites plan to train the American people for new jobs. What new jobs exactly? He didn't say. He didn't have a clue. But Bush's Labor Department knows. It lists 30 job categories that will have the greatest growth between now and 2010. Number one, fast food workers. Two-thirds of their growth jobs pay less than $20,000 a year. This is Jim Hightower saying, forget high tech. Colin Powell envisions you in a hairnet.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Welcome back. Good. Happy Tuesday. It's the 21st of June, 04, 133 days until the election, 380 days since Joe Wilson's wipeout. Well, you know the list. Anyhow, weapons of mass destruction, 1,020 days since 9/11, and we're still looking for the 6'4" guy on a camel with a dialysis machine. Our interesting news bite, as it were, for the day. I don't know if you saw this news story that the Supreme Court ruled yesterday, I believe it was, or at least it was reported yesterday, that basically you don't have the right to sue an HMO in a state court, and they used an obscure rule that has to do with you know the ERISA law, just a completely unrelated law that defined how certain types of lawsuits could be handled. This law predated the existence of HMOs. And they said because of this law, you can't sue your local HMO in state courts. State courts, of course, being generally because, hey, this is the state, this is the people that you live with, these are the people you know, this is the community, you know what happened to poor Ralph when they left that sponge inside him and he had to have his guts removed or whatever. State courts tend to be more generous, shall we say, than federal courts. And also, in a federal court, you can't sue for pain and suffering under this ERISA thing. So you can only sue. So if, for example, and this wasn't a malpractice thing. This was the, can you sue your HMO if your doctor says you need a particular type of treatment and the HMO says, well, that's all very well and good, but we're not going to pay for it. Can you sue your HMO for that? And, you know, of course, the Bush administration, well, here's the then and now. George W. Bush, USA Today op-ed article entitled, I Will Build on My Record, said, or wrote, quote, I signed into law some of the toughest patient protection laws in the nation, and I support a patient bill of rights for all patients similar to those already enacted in Texas. Well, the truth, by the way, I mean, this was during the 2000 campaign that he said this. The truth of the matter is he didn't sign it into law. It was passed over his objection. It was passed with a veto-proof majority, and he let it go into law without his signature. But in any case, he took credit for it. And now in yesterday's New York Times, before the Supreme Court, the Bush administration opposed the Texas law, instead joining two managed care companies, Aetna Health, Inc. and Cigna Healthcare of Texas, Inc. Those two companies alone have given President Bush and the Republican Party more than $1.7 million since the year 2000. Very interesting. Okay, here we've got, last night, Louise and I went to see the movie. I'm not talking about Michael Moore's movie, which, I guess is next week going to be the movie, but whatever. But we went to see Super Size Me. And, you know, I got to say, I was expecting some anti-corporate screed. And I thought this guy, I'll come across his name as we come across it here, who produced the movie. Anyhow, I thought he did a pretty decent job. Morgan Spurlock, here he is. You know, raising questions of, you know, hey, is this about individual responsibility? Is this about a fast food industry run amok? Is this, I mean, what's going on here? Why do we have this explosion of obesity? And, of course, as soon as the movie was first debuted at Sundance and won a bunch of awards and it became obvious that it was going to be in theaters across America, and it's growing now, it's showing in more and more theaters. As the UK Independent noted, an outlet called the American Council on Science and Health started ripping into Super Size Me in a series of press releases, op-ed pieces, and capsule opinions offered by purported dietary and health experts. Another organization called Tech Central Station offered itself as a clearinghouse of opinion and factual evidence, condemning Spurlock's film as scurrilous, misleading, disgusting, dangerous, and a dishonest piece of work. The American Council on Science and Health has not publicly disclosed the fact that it is corporate funded since 1991, but in the past they've included cookie manufacturers, chocolate manufacturers, Burger King, and Coca-Cola, a business partner of McDonald's. Tech Central Station, meanwhile, is backed by the oil giant ExxonMobil, General Motors, and, yes, McDonald's. One op-ed piece written, you know, against this movie, again, by Jim Glassman, who's a lobbyist for the food industry, made its way in a couple of newspapers, including the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, which apologized after its discovery, after discovered his direct links to McDonald's. But the counter spinning goes on. Now we have the center. So, tell me, what's the name of the group there?
Oh, you mean the group that's helping me with my interview schedule?
There you go, the ones that get money.
Competitive, right, they help me to set up interviews like the one I'm doing with you right now. It's called the Competitive Enterprise Institute. It's
right.
A think tank and also a policy analysis group.
Right, with money from Philip Morris, ExxonMobil, and Coca-Cola, among others.
I don't work for them, so there's no connection in terms of that. Actually, that article that you referred to, I think if you notice at the very end, it says that I have corporate sponsors. Now, to tell you the truth, this merely kind of points up what I've been filming and documenting over the past couple of months while I've been engaging in a McDonald's diet. But you know, they claim that I have corporate sponsors. I can assure you I have absolutely no corporate sponsors. And if anyone would like to step up and pay my electric bill or my phone bill in the next month, I'd really appreciate it. You know, I have no corporate sponsors. So
you get no money from the Competitive Enterprise Institute?
I get no money from anyone other than when I go out and do my regular work, which is animal training.
Yeah.
So, you know, this project has consumed me financially.
Why are you doing this, then?
I'm doing it because I'm very tired of seeing these documentaries that purport to present something that's factual when in actuality all they're doing is manipulating the information.
Have you seen Super Size Me?
Spurlock, huh?
Have you seen Super Size Me?
Yes, I have seen Super Size Me. Very dramatic. My goodness, you know. Actually, part of it's going to be satirized in my film. So,
hopefully will be equally dramatic then, right?
Well, no, I'm just going to satirize part of what he's doing. I mean, really, it's ridiculous. He went in and he forced himself to eat an incredible amount of calories every day. You could do that anywhere. You could go to a French restaurant. You could go to your mother's kitchen. You could go to a vegan restaurant. If you eat that much food, chances are you're going to gain a lot of weight, and you're not going to be very healthy, no matter where you eat. Now, another thing that I was really concerned about is this thought that, okay, let's say tomorrow we do what a lot of people, or not a lot of people, but, you know, there's a very loud, vocal group of people who would like to see the end of McDonald's and Burger King and Taco Bell.
Really?
I can assure you, if we got rid of all of them tomorrow, well, first we'd throw a lot of people out of work, but that notwithstanding.
Oh, wait a second. Let me just stop you right there. Hang on just a second. Wait. You wouldn't. Okay. You throw a lot of people out of work. What would happen? First of all, let's be very clear about this, Soso.
Hold on. I said that notwithstanding. I mean, it's a fact. If you got rid of all of them, those people would be thrown out of work.
No, it's not a fact.
Is this. The problem would not be solved. We would still have these weight problems, whatever you want to call it, obesity problems or whatever.
Okay, now you've got two points out there. Let's just deal with them one at a time. First of all, you know, we would still have the weight problem. We'll get to that in a minute because, you know, I don't think that the local diner, and we actually have three of them here in Montpelier, Vermont. There is no McDonald's in this city. Every year they sue us. Every year we vote to pay the town lawyer another $54,000 to fight the lawsuit, and there is no McDonald's. We're the only capital city in the United States with no McDonald's.
When
you go and you eat at the local diner, well, first of all, the local diner is not spending billions of dollars to convince my children that they should eat the worst stuff that's on their menu, number one.
Yes, and I guarantee you that your local diner is serving things that are far higher in calories than anything that you find at McDonald's.
It may well be true,
yes,
but they're not trying to convince my children that that's the way to eat.
I have just made you a challenge, you know. I want you to show me that those people who are serving that food in the diner, and believe me, I love diner food myself, but I'm not silly enough to think that if I sit down at a diner that I'm eating anything better.
But they're not spending billions of dollars to convince my children that their food is what they should eat.
They also aren't standing outside of schools like PETA does and handing little playing cards to kids.
You're changing the subject. The other point you made, So, is that if McDonald's went away, then all these people would go out of work. And I would say, you know, I would think that as a good advocate of capitalism and free enterprise, you would be intelligent enough to know that if McDonald's went away, two things would immediately happen. First of all, a lot of local businesses would spring up to fill that business niche. You know, people would say, hey, people want food and they're going to, and all these, and these diners are going to business.
You are so sure that people have the business acumen to be able to set
that? that's built America. It's called entrepreneurialism.
We are absolutely very, very good. Individuals are very, very good at setting things up like that. But, you know, to look at McDonald's and to say, ooh, they make billions of dollars a year. Well, let's look at some other corporations.
So let me finish my sentence here. Let me just finish the sentence. I'm going to pot you down here because I just want to finish this one sentence. If we were to do away with McDonald's, you would have all these local entrepreneurial businesses that would fill that ecological niche. And then every night, at the end of the evening, the money from those local businesses would go into the local banking system, where it could be loaned to other local businesses, whereas... Yes, exactly. At the end of the every evening, McDonald's pushes a button, and that money goes all to Chicago.
Hold on. Are you saying to me that you actually believe that McDonald's owns every franchise out there? Then I say to you, you have not done your research, because there are individual people who own McDonald's. There are small corporations from cities like your own that own the McDonald's.
I realize that many of them are franchisees. There are many franchisees. But still, the vast majority of the money that is flowing through McDonald's, because they are required to buy products from McDonald's and through McDonald's, is all ending up in Chicago, not in your town.
Well, I disagree with that 100%, but I think that you need to do a little bit more research on that if you're going to make such a...
I have. I wrote a whole book about it. It's called Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights.
Wait a minute. You've read one book?
No, I wrote one book. I've written actually 15 books. Hang on, so we got to take a break. It's always great arguing with you. Stick around. I can't control the breaks here. This one happens. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 20 minutes past the hour. We're talking to So-So Wait, Lake Competitive Enterprise Institute. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. For more than 27 years, the Progressive Magazine in these times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Has George W. Bush delivered on his 2000 campaign pledge to run the government more like a business? New reports from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and Office of Personnel Management show that the federal workforce grew by a net 70,000 since Bush took office. And these numbers don't even count contractors who now compete for federal work. Of the 12 million people who work in some capacity for the federal government, less than 2 million are actually employed by government agencies.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. you'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with So-So Whately of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, who is making her own movie to take on Super Size Me. So-So, how can parents protect their children from unrestrained corporate power? I mean, the average child receives 10,000 messages a year from McDonald's, and even if every single meal, you know, 365 days a year, three meals a day, you try to teach your kids about how to eat well, that would only be 1,000
right.
messages. How can parents
right.
compete with that?
Right. I understand what you're saying, okay? Granted, we have a very different society now than we had 10, 20, 30 years ago, okay? And I'm almost 50, so I've seen a lot of these changes occur. Right now, you're right. We are completely bombarded with a lot of advertising. It's not just advertising towards children. It's all sorts of advertising aimed at everybody for different reasons. And, you know, in terms of teaching our kids, well, we need to teach them how to learn to evaluate the information that they're getting. You know, if you're sitting on the couch with your kid and, you know, some kind of an ad comes on, you might say with them, well, do you think that toy looks like a lot of fun to play with? You know, how long do you think you would play with it? Or, you know, what about that food over there? What do you think about that food? You know, talk with your kids.
To a 3-year-old about the McDonald's clown?
I mean, a 3-year-old, hey, I mean, what's this problem everybody has with clowns? You know, I guess people, you know, Morgan Spurlock must have been scared by a clown or something at some
well,
point. Because
clowns are kids' things.
I have no problem
things.
With Ronald McDonald. You see, I've been in the entertainment industry, and I've worked around children for a very long time. There's a lot of people who present themselves as clowns and make it a lot of fun for kids.
Right, but
so,
just
you know,
sell
I mean,
products?
Protecting your kids, teach them how to evaluate the information that they get every day, whether it's through advertising, whether it's through the news media, or even a magazine article. We need to teach them how to evaluate the information. That's what I'm trying to do.
Right, and when a child is 3-4 years old, doesn't understand the concept of the commerce.
So why isn't mom or dad making sure that they say no if they need to say no?
Right,
you know
that's,
I mean? It's the
that's
parent's
my question.
Responsibility there, you know. But I have no problem with taking a 3-year-old and letting him have a few French fries at McDonald's or a couple of chicken McNuggets. Come on, really. You know, that's ridiculous.
Okay, you're suggesting that you suffered, you know, you're making a film, you're self-funding this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean,
cool.
I know it's, people are amazed.
I know, John Stossel's going to give you a plug on Friday, I guess, right?
What was that?
Is John Stossel giving you a plug on Friday?
He didn't give me a plug. It was already on last week.
It was last week.
Both Morgan Spurlock, myself, and Chaz Weaver from California.
Ah, okay. I missed that.
Who also lost a lot of weight as well. So,
yeah.
And I went back on the McDonald's diet June 1st. I've already lost another 4 pounds. I still feel very healthy.
Yeah. So how do you... How do you deal with the reality that, you know, there's a lot of really good research out that shows that high fructose corn syrup actually alters metabolisms in ways that harm the liver and that lead to obesity.
So I don't have to eat a lot of high fructose corn syrup. I can go to the store and read whether or not it's in there.
Right.
I can look at that myself.
So when you went on the McDonald's diet,
eat it.
Then you weren't drinking the big drinks.
Oh, no. I love the Diet Coke because for me it's like coffee. I don't drink coffee. So I have a Diet Coke in the morning.
Right.
You know,
so you're avoiding,
I like my caffeine cold.
The difference is there's no high fructose corn syrup in it.
Well, I mean, you know, but there's high fructose corn syrup in a lot of different things that I might choose to eat, you know. Again, it's the amount of food that you're putting into your body that really makes the
difference.
Then
how do we deal with the fact that you've got, like, Coca-Cola going to schools and giving them cash to put in vending machines, having them sign non-disclosure agreements that they can't show to parents about the deal? And
I haven't heard anything about that. I do know that sometimes they put vending machines of different sorts.
And requiring that no products that are not Coke products be sold.
Right. There are schools that are doing that. That's fine. Although I do understand that there are kids in some schools that are starting to fight back because they realize, the same as I do, that freedom of choice is much more important than having a bunch of people tell us what we can and cannot eat and when and where and what have you.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you on that. Caveat emptor. Okay. Thank you very much. Good point. Well made. Good luck with your documentary. So thanks for being with us.
Posted.
Say that again.
Okay. I'll keep you posted on what's going on.
You got a website for it?
CEI.org. O-R-G.
Okay. Great. Thanks a lot. So Waitley.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. 29 minutes past the hour.
There's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Allegations that the Kroger company, owner of the Ralph's grocery store chain, illegally hired locked-out workers during a major strike in Southern California earlier this year may have merit. Kroger and the U.S. Justice Department both confirm an investigation has begun into the accusations, which reportedly involved hiring members of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union under the names and social security numbers of their children. This comes nearly half a year after the UFCW filed a lawsuit in a California court asking for the practice to be probed. That suit was dismissed as part of the strike settlement in February. But a grand jury is now hearing evidence collected so far, and Ralph's executives and store managers who took part in the scheme may face both state and federal criminal charges. In addition, if these claims can be proven, those workers who were locked out could receive back pay in the form of unemployment benefits denied during the dispute.
A Supreme Court ruling on Monday weakened state patient protection laws throughout the country. Two patients argued that Texas patient protection laws allowed them to pursue large lawsuits in their state court. Part of the suit was brought by a hysterectomy patient who claimed that Cigna Healthcare of Texas evicted her from a hospital after only one day. A doctor had recommended a longer stay, but the HMO refused to pay for it. The Supreme Court did not rule on whether she received appropriate care or not, simply stating that such lawsuits should be brought to the federal level.
Yesterday, the former chairman and CEO of media giant Vivendi Universal was arrested by French police. Jean-Marie Messier has been implicated in an investigation involving the manipulation of Vivendi's stock price, but he's yet to be formally charged. Also on Monday, Vivendi's video games unit announced it would lay off 350 people, more than one-third of its workforce, part of what it calls a division-wide restructuring.
Berkeley, California, recently joined a growing list of cities with living wage ordinances designed to raise employees' salaries to match the actual cost of living. Opponents of the move argued before the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that living wage laws violate the U.S. Constitution's prohibition on legislative interference with valid contracts. But in a 2-1 ruling, the court disagreed.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Trouble's coming to the not-so-friendly skies. The Federal Aviation Administration is considering raising the retirement age of air traffic controllers to 56 because it predicts a major staffing crunch sometime during the next 9 years. Nearly half the controllers currently on the job will be able to retire by then. Ironically, many in this group are those who replaced the 12,000 air traffic controllers fired by Ronald Reagan in 1981 as part of his successful drive to break their union.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Get cut up or get cut down. All about the know-how or just a matter of taste. You stop telling me the way that I gotta play. You put too much food on my plate. Come on, get up, get it, and get down.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. Yeah, put some more food on my plate there. You know, it's interesting. So-so had told me during the break at 20 after that she could only stay on for another 5 minutes because she's busily editing her movie. So, a few points I wanted to make that I will continue to make. One, her closing comment. Everybody should have freedom of choice. We shouldn't have people telling us what we can and cannot do. That sounds nice, doesn't it? I wonder why, then, the Republican House and Senate pushed through legislation last year making it illegal to sue fast food companies for getting fat. Oh, it's those nanny state Republicans telling you what you can't do. Sorry, you don't have access to the courts. You're just a person. And, you know, and when people do try to get into the courts, I mean, you know, there were last year there were these two class action suits blaming McDonald's for making people fat. They lost. So you take your chances, you know. But now you can't even take your chances in the courts. Because the Republicans have decided, no, you shouldn't have that choice. You shouldn't have that choice. The point that I was making with So-So about the schools is that many schools are discovering when actually this a remarkable story here we go. Soda's out healthier students in. This is from the United Teacher magazine, of all places. And it's written by a teacher. And she says, 2 years ago, one of my health students simply asked if we could sell some pure juice in the vending machines on campus. Having 22 vending machines, I was surprised at the fact that it wasn't already offered. I slipped the request into our financial manager's mailbox and received a reply the next day. It said, quote, sorry, selling juice would conflict with our soda contract, end quote. Scary but true. She says, how could this be? As a health teacher, I promote sound nutrition to close to 200 students a day. Were my students really being denied the right to purchase pure fruit juice from vending machines? Did Coca-Cola really have more influence over my students' beverage choice than all of their nutrition instruction? I realized it was time to take a peek at the dark side of the soda industry, and boy, did this teacher learn a lesson. Venice High School, this is Venice, California, has an exclusive soda contract. All beverages sold in vending machines other than coffee or milk must be made by Coca-Cola, Inc. In return, the company gives us $3,000 per year up front and a few hundred cases of free product. Sounds good until you discover that another school in your district scored a $57,000 marquee out of their deal. But then, who would know? The contract has a confidentiality clause in it which forbids discussing the contents. And if you request a hard copy of it, you will most likely be denied. And if you give out the information as I did, you may be summoned to the principal's office. And she goes through her adventures in strange land there. But as Sosa pointed out, some schools are starting to fight back. They are saying, no, we really would like some decent food. By the way, our number is 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to weigh in on this. But, you know, why is it that the cons don't want people to have the freedom to sue? Well, it's pretty straightforward. Pretty straightforward process. I mean, you know, it's the answer is simple. Corporate power. The whole, you know, the core of the conservative agenda is cheap labor and corporate power. I mean, it just boils right down to that. Give the corporations more power. And as I said, if we were to say, okay, let's enforce, for example, the Sherman Antitrust Act and say that one fast food company producing 40%, as I recall. Let's see here. McDonald's distributes more toys per year than Toys R Us. McDonald's statistics. One in four Americans visits a fast food restaurant. I don't have the... here we are. McDonald's represents 43% of total U.S. fast food market. 43%. So what if we were to go back to the Sherman Act and say, you know, this is wiping out small businesses. This is anti-competitive. And, you know, sorry, you can't do it. Now, you know, government interference in business, what? There are two ways you can argue that, so why not leave it up to local communities? Why not say, you know, okay, local, you know, we're not going to say that you can't be McDonald's and nationwide, or that you can't market aggressively to children. But we are going to give local communities the right to say no. Because I can tell you, living in a town that has been trying to say no to McDonald's, it's damn hard and expensive and time-consuming. 21 minutes before the hour, Michael in San Rios, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Michael, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Hey, I agree with some of what you're saying. Let me frame this by starting and saying I'm a pretty liberal Democrat. You have to take a stand and say no to your children. My daughter is now 16. We grew up without McDonald's. I also am building and have a project in the rainforest. So we took a stand because of the damage that McDonald's and all other fast food chains have done to the rainforest, that we were never going to eat at these kinds of places. We've also taken a nutritional stance.
Yeah. I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. In fact, you know, for 15 of the 20 or so years that our three children were growing up, we had no television in our home. I mean, it was like, you know, enough, right? You know, I don't disagree with you that it is the job of parents to educate their kids. And yet, at the same time, the kids are absolutely overwhelmed by this stuff, and not just at home where the parents can respond to it. Now you find that actual products have made their way into textbooks. Textbook manufacturers are being spiffed by candy manufacturers to do things like math problems in the new textbooks now say, if you have five Snickers bars and three of those Snickers bars are given to Johnny, what percentage of, or, you know, what fraction of the Snicker of the total five Snickers bars does Johnny now own?
No, you know, I think that's totally wrong, and I'll tell you, I think that if we look deep enough, we'll find a lot of this now being linked to this No Child Left Behind Act. Who's printing our textbooks and who's corporate in bed with who?
Well, what No Child Left Behind does is it basically takes control of local schools away from local schools and forces them to teach to the test and, you know, get rid of programs like phys ed and health education and music and arts and things like that, and produces less well-rounded people and has produced an economic crisis. In part of it is the act, and part of it is the fact that the Bush administration has refused to fund the act. In other words, they require schools to do these things, and then they say, but we're not going to give you the money.
Right.
And so there, yeah, I mean, you know, there is that, and that's a big issue. But I think the other thing is that I think that, you know, So-So, for example, is in her well-intentioned way, and she says, you know, she's taking no money from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. I can tell you from personal experience, if I wanted to hire a PR firm to get me on John Stossel's show, it would cost $20,000 a month. And so, you know, if Competitive Enterprise Institute is out there doing this for her, maybe no money is changing hands, but there is some benefit, let's say. But anyway, I think that she's doing what Ronald Reagan did in the 1950s, innocently enough, frankly. I'm willing to give her the benefit of the doubt. When he went on television wearing a doctor's lab coat and playing the role of a doctor on television commercials, and said, smoke Pall Mells because they're gentler on your throat. Because the tobacco companies were hiding from people the fact that their tobacco was as destructive as it is. And in my opinion, the fast food industry in particular, and the sugar industry in large part, but the fast food industry, you know, the big chunk of this, is hiding from the American people the destructive nature of high fructose corn syrup.
I think
is the next
Tom,
nicotine.
I totally agree with that. I think So-So has the right to do what she's doing, and we certainly don't want to deny that right. I think that people have the right, should have the right legally to sue the fast food industry for health.
Yeah, but you can't anymore.
I'll tell you what's coming next down the road. I'm very big on consumer products and educating people as to what's in the things they clean their houses with and why cancer and other degenerative diseases are rampant. Many are related to that. And one of the next things coming down the road is that lawyers are already gearing up to create major lawsuits against the consumer products industry. And if this Bush administration actually gets elected and gets a second term, that's already in their plans to keep us from being able to sue companies like Procter & Gamble and Lieber Brother.
Right.
So the whole thing is a disaster. I think we need education on one side. I think we need freedom of choice on the other side, and some regulation that at least allows people access to information about what they're eating, what they're bringing into their homes, and what corporations are doing to them.
Yeah, see, here's the big problem, Michael. Have you seen the movie Super Size Me, by the way?
Not yet.
Okay, I recommend it. It was actually, funny. I mean, it was actually a good dumb movie. I mean, if you just want to, have a good hour and a half of entertainment, it was a good movie. Aside from the message, interviewing. One of our last attorney generals, the attorney general under Clinton, I'm forgetting the guy's name, and who talked about obesity as an epidemic. This is causing diabetes, heart disease, blah blah blah, all these problems. But the big problem, the uber problem, the problem that's larger than all these other problems right now, is that one of the roles historically of government, certainly that we the people have collectively said should be the role of government, is because our society is so large that we can't know what everybody's doing. The role, is to protect us from the psychopaths among us. All right. In other words, the libertarian vision works fine in a town of 100 people. If you've got a doctor who routinely does lousy surgery and kills people, everybody will know and nobody will go to him. But in a country of hundreds of millions of people, it doesn't work anymore. And so we the people decided we're going to create some government institutions that are going to inform us about dangers in the marketplace and are going to take some care in making sure that our food supply is pure and our drugs are safe and things like that. And what has happened largely since Ronald Reagan took office, largely since the so-called conservative revolution took over America, and Clinton only marginally rolled this back, is that corporations have taken control of the regulatory agencies of our government so that they no longer, A, regulate the industries, and B, educate the people, but instead, C, they promote the products of the corporations. I mean, they travel around the world promoting these products and keeping from us those things that our tax dollars should be paying for us to learn about. And that's my concern. Michael, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Don.
Okay, good to hear from you. 14 minutes before the hour. Let me just for example, lay it on you. I mean, this about corn syrup, for example, which I've been saying this for 2 years now. I think that the rise in obesity in the United States can track it right back to the year that Coke changed their formula, and I'm not blaming this on Coke. They were probably the most visible part of the industry that did it. But in that 2 or 3 year period, virtually all of the candy and soft drink manufacturers stopped using cane sugar, which contains glucose and sucrose, which are more complex sugars, and started using high fructose corn syrup. And the reason why, of course, is because The government had been giving huge subsidies. We're talking multi-billion-dollar subsidies to the three largest agricultural companies to produce genetically modified corn that would produce this high fructose corn syrup, or that would produce the corn starch that could be converted into it. I mean, high fructose corn syrup didn't even exist until the 1960s. The process for putting mixing an enzyme in with corn starch to produce high fructose corn syrup was invented in Japan in the 1960s. So this is something that has never, before 1960, was never part of the diet of the human race. And now it has spread across the world. And so Dr. George A. Bray, an obesity researcher and professor of medicine at Louisiana State University Medical Center, believes that high fructose corn syrup is the largest variable in the meteoric rise of obesity and all the diseases associated with it in the United States. He notes that its consumption closely parallels the jump in obesity rates. Here's a quote from him. "Nothing else in the food supply does this. It's a very, very striking relationship," end quote. We find that from 1965, it was in the 60s that this first appeared, although it was in the 80s that it really got big. But from 1965 to 1996, adolescents' milk consumption dropped by 36%, but during that same period, soft drink consumption increased by 287% in boys and 224% in girls. Now, here's what the animal studies and preliminary human studies show. High fructose leads to insulin resistance and elevated triglyceride levels, which are markers for heart disease. Unlike glucose, cane syrup, you know, the sugar cane syrup, fructose is almost entirely metabolized in the liver. When fructose reaches the liver, says Dr. William J. Whelan, a biochemist at the University of Miami School of Medicine, the liver goes bananas and stops everything else to metabolize the fructose. And the fructose propels the liver into fat-promoting mode by activating the formation of enzymes that lead to elevated levels of bad cholesterol and triglycerides. There you go. The smoking gun. Is your government going to tell you about it? I don't think so. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the founding fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation, free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Flashing fish and other glow-in-the-dark creatures are common in the deep sea. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Very little sunlight penetrates more than a few hundred feet past the surface of the sea, but the blackness of the ocean depths is punctuated by the glowing and blinking lights of all kinds of sea creatures. In fact, almost all the fish and animals that live in the deep water create some kind of light. Tracy Sutton studies this deep, dark environment. Sutton is a marine scientist at the Harbor Branch Oceanographic Institution in Fort Pierce, Florida.
Almost everything down there is luminescent. Fish, shrimp, squid, jellyfish, they all can produce light.
Sutton says many species of jellyfish glow all over. They look like tiny moons as they dance through the water. Other animals have specific organs that light up. The dragonfish is a good example. This jet black fish has a long appendage dangling from its chin like a whisker. Sutton says the ends of it are studded with flashing lights.
It's the same kind of chemistry as that found in a firefly. There's a protein called luciferin, and if you add oxygen, it glows, it gives off light. And they can control the amount of light and the duration of the flashes neurologically.
Sutton says dragonfish use their flashing lights to entice prey to come closer. Other fish use light as a defense. They flash a bright light in the face of an attacker and then try to swim away. Sutton says it's not clear how or why deep sea creatures developed this trait.
Some things are luminescent that don't even have eyes, so you wonder what possible benefit it could have. It could be that it's just a leftover function of some other process.
Whatever the reason, Sutton says luminescence is the rule rather than the exception in the deep sea. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by.
I see
friends shaking hands, saying how do you do. They're really saying I love you.
What an incredible voice. It's 4 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Speaking of the administration, in large part our government now, really representing the interests of really what boils down to probably fewer than 3,000 large corporations. They're certainly not representing the interests of the small business that I run. There's certainly, you know, or other small and medium-sized businesses. But here we have the FBI. Paul Krugman today, in his piece in the New York Times, reports on something that I reported here on this show on months ago when it happened. You may remember that in Noonday, Texas, there was a terrorist, and he had a bomb-making factory, and he actually had bombs, weapons of mass destruction, chemical and biological weapons. Well, at least chemical. I can't say for sure I remember the biological part. But anyway, he had these chemical weapons that could have killed thousands of people. And Ashcroft never once mentioned it in a press conference. Why? Well, because it doesn't fit in with the storyline. See, this guy was a conservative Christian. He was of the Tim McVeigh variety, who believe that they can bring about the Battle of Armageddon by bringing down the great Satan of the American government, kind of thing, you know. And not that different from the Grover Norquist. We don't want to destroy American government. We just want to shrink it down to the size where we can take it into the bathtub and into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub. Well, 2 weeks ago, a representative of the FBI appealed to an industry group for help in combating what John Ashcroft told the audience the FBI regards as the country's leading domestic terrorist threats. Is it white supremacists with chemical weapons who actually are out there? No, actually, it's ecological and animal rights extremists. Yeah, they're the real terror threat in America. Because they are challenging corporate power. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Allegations that the Kroger company, owner of the Ralph's grocery store chain, illegally hired locked-out workers during a major strike in Southern California earlier this year may have merit. Kroger and the U.S. Justice Department both confirm an investigation has begun into the accusations, which reportedly involved hiring members of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union under the names and social security numbers of their children. This comes nearly half a year after the UFCW filed a lawsuit in a California court asking for the practice to be probed. That suit was dismissed as part of the strike settlement in February. But a grand jury is now hearing evidence collected so far, and Ralph's executives and store managers who took part in the scheme may face both state and federal criminal charges. In addition, if these claims can be proven, those workers who were locked out could receive back pay in the form of unemployment benefits denied during the dispute.
A Supreme Court ruling on Monday weakened state patient protection laws throughout the country. Two patients argued that Texas patient protection laws allowed them to pursue large lawsuits in their state court. Part of the suit was brought by a hysterectomy patient who claimed that Cigna Healthcare of Texas evicted her from a hospital after only one day. A doctor had recommended a longer stay, but the HMO refused to pay for it. The Supreme Court did not rule on whether she received appropriate care or not, simply stating that such lawsuits should be brought to the federal level.
Yesterday, the former chairman and CEO of media giant Vivendi Universal was arrested by French police. Jean-Marie Messier has been implicated in an investigation involving the manipulation of Vivendi's stock price, but he's yet to be formally charged. Also on Monday, Vivendi's video games unit announced it would lay off 350 people, more than one-third of its workforce, part of what it calls a division-wide restructuring.
Berkeley, California, recently joined a growing list of cities with living wage ordinances designed to raise employees' salaries to match the actual cost of living. Opponents of the move argued before the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that living wage laws violate the U.S. Constitution's prohibition on legislative interference with valid contracts. But in a 2-1 ruling, the court disagreed.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Trouble's coming to the not-so-friendly skies. The Federal Aviation Administration is considering raising the retirement age of air traffic controllers to 56 because it predicts a major staffing crunch sometime during the next 9 years. Nearly half the controllers currently on the job will be able to retire by then. Ironically, many in this group are those who replaced the 12,000 air traffic controllers fired by Ronald Reagan in 1981 as part of his successful drive to break their union.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Does George W. get up every morning and gargle with a big glass of political cynicism? Or is he genetically cynical and just can't help himself? Take his recent radio address on Memorial Day weekend. Bush wrapped himself as tightly as possible in the flag and blathered on at length about how much he loves those veterans who have gone to war and fought for our freedom, a noble stand that he personally avoided taking when his time came, using family connections to keep him safely out of harm's way. But that's another story. In his address, George told the nation that we can acknowledge the debt we owe these veterans by, quote, showing our respect and gratitude. I don't know if he gargled before delivering this radio sermon, but I do know that just hours before it, Bush's budget office announced that it would cut $1 billion out of existing veterans' health care programs next year if Bush gets elected this fall. There's gratitude for you. These programs have already been so shortchanged by Bush that his own Secretary of Veterans Affairs has criticized their inadequacy. At present, nearly 350,000 injured and ill vets are having to wait in line to get admitted for health care because the VA system is so backed up. The average wait is more than 6 months. Yet rather than cutting the backlog, as Bush promised to do when he took office, he now proposes to cut 540 VA staffers who review disability claims to speed up the line and help veterans get the care they need. This billion-dollar cut comes on top of Bush's ongoing attempt to close veterans' hospitals all across the country, his $50 million cut in medical research on new prosthetic technologies for dismembered vets, and his cutting off of 164,000 veterans from their existing prescription drug coverage. This is Jim Hightower saying, veterans could use a little less rhetorical respect from the president and a whole lot more tangible support.
America is a country of entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner, you're helping shoulder the lion's share of the U.S. economy. You can lighten that load a little by joining Sam's Club. Sam Walton created Sam's Club to give small business owners the purchasing power of big businesses. So no matter what kind of business you own, when you shop at Sam's Club, you get everyday low costs on products you need every day. And you can rely on us to carry those products at low warehouse prices. To save you time, we offer click and pull and fax and pull, convenient services to help you order ahead for fast pickup. Place your order at samsclub.com or by fax before 5 p.m. and at no extra charge, it's ready to pick up the next morning. Now that's teamwork, and we'd like to be a small part of your team. After all, while you may be carrying around the weight of the American economy, you shouldn't have to do all the heavy lifting by yourself. Join the club, Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on this Tuesday, the 21st of June, the year 2004. I guess depending on the calendar you subscribe to. I've been getting increasing numbers of emails from people saying, according to the Mayan calendar, 2012 is the end of the world, blah, 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 you know. And that year seems to be ringing a lot of bells. I mean, you know, some of the fundamentalists of various religions now are hanging on to it. I don't know. It's strange times we live in. Anyhow, on this day, and speaking of times and calendars, on this day in history, this is a significant date. Now, first of all, let us remember that any day now or any week now
or maybe any month now. I'm not sure exactly when it's going to happen. Sometime in the near future, Martha Stewart is going to find out how much time she's going to spend in the slammer for what was originally a charge of selling stock because she had inside knowledge that its price was about to drop. Sam Waxel, who was the owner of the company and the founder of the company, it was alleged, had dumped his stock and had called Martha and told her to dump her stock, and she did so. That was the original allegation. She was actually acquitted of that and instead convicted of telling a lie. Essentially, you know, it was sort of like, you know, Bill Clinton, you know. I mean, she was convicted of telling a lie in the process of being interrogated about this stock deal. But they never were able to demonstrate that the actual stock deal itself, that she had inside information. Although, you know, it still looks suspicious. I mean, who knows? But I find it odd that, you know, they would go after this high-profile woman for a deal that made her maybe, what, $35,000, I think it was, in profits. And, you know, which is, I mean, for Martha Stewart, nothing. And yet nobody has gone off after a few others. For example, 14 years ago today, June 22nd, 1990, a young man who was on the audit committee of a corporation which he helped head up was in a meeting the month before in which the CEO said that there were going to be, quote, significant supply and trading losses and other accounting issues, and a liquidity crisis was coming up. On this day in history, that young man, an officer of the corporation, a member of the board of directors of the corporation, a member of the audit committee, an insider on what would happen to the future of that corporation, sold 212,140 shares of his corporation at $4 a share, made $848,000. Within 2 months after the bad news came out, which, of course, everybody in the corporation knew was going to come out, that stock price of Harkin Energy had plummeted 75% to $1 a share. Thus, George W. Bush made a $600,000 profit on that $848,000 stock sale by selling it before word was released publicly. Now, interestingly, while Bush was on Harkin's board in 1989, this, of course, was in 1990, the year before, the company sold a subsidiary to a dummy partnership and used the revenue to hide $8 million in losses. This is kind of similar to something Kenny Boy did. 2 years later, the SEC exposed the fraud. This, as the Washington Post said, quote, keep in mind this is long ago, this is 15 years ago, Bush's service on the Harkin board has drawn attention in other ways. In 1989, Harkin sold a subsidiary, Aloha Petroleum Limited, by lending money to the buyer. Harkin then declared the amount as a cash gain, masking massive losses on its balance sheet. Critics call it reminiscent of Enron Corp's accounting gimmicks, although the White House contends the Harkin situation was different in scope and intent. Yeah, it was only a few million bucks that George W. made, not hundreds of millions like Kenny Boy. In 1989, Harkin created the Harkin Bahrain Energy Company, located where? In the Cayman Islands, so as not to have to pay taxes in the United States. And in 1994, and last week, Bush aides refused to allow or to call on the Securities and Exchange Commission to release its full file on the investigation of George W.'s stock sale, which happened this day in history, June 20th, 1990, 212,140 shares of Harkin Energy, an insider trading deal if ever there was one. But I'd like to move on from that. From dumb Republicans to dumb Democrats. It's like, what is it that causes liberals, progressives, and Democrats not to understand? Maybe it's not to understand how the Constitution works. Maybe it's that we just don't teach American history in our schools anymore. But how is it that they don't get it? For example, Ralph Nader has now picked Peter Camejo. Peter Camejo, you may recall, was the guy who pulled a big chunk of votes, a couple hundred thousand votes, in California. He was the Green Party candidate against Ralph Nader, against Arnold Schwarzenegger and Arianna Huffington and Cruz Bustamante. I mean, these were basically the big four. Right, so Peter Camejo developed some national fame, outside of California, as being the Green Party candidate for governor of California. And in the early days before Arnold threw his hat into the ring, people actually thought he might have a chance. So Nader selects Camejo, and Nader has this to say about it.
It's time for the American people to engage more intensively in the political process.
Yeah.
Not to turn off. Turning off politics ensures that politics turns on you.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good. It's time for people to get more involved in politics. Right on, Ralph. Continue.
It's time for the American people to become expert voters.
Okay, you mean like understanding the voting process, like understanding the fact that in the United States we have a winner-take-all, first-past-the-post system. The only other countries like this are Greece and Australia. I mean, to some small extent, Canada and the United Kingdom share some of our problems, but basically every other democracy in the world has proportional representation, where if a party gets 30% of the vote, they get 30% of the seats in Parliament. If they get 5% of the vote, they get 5% of the seats in Parliament. And you can have 5 parties, you can have 10 parties, you can have 30 parties. But we have a system where if you had 10 parties, if you had 10 candidates, and 9 of those candidates each polled 9% of the vote, let's say 8 of those candidates polled 10% of the vote, one got 9% and one got 11%. Then that one candidate who got 11% of the vote would win the election and would represent 100% of the people with a mandate only offered by 11%. It's not very democratic. Yeah, it was a failing in the original Constitution. Our founders, when they started out, they did the very best they could. This was the first democracy of, a representative democracy of its type that had ever been created. I mean, there were a lot of good models out there that we borrowed from. We took a little from the Roman Republic idea and a little from the Greek democracy idea and a lot from the Iroquois Confederacy idea. But, this was the first. And James Madison went at length in Federalist Number 10, saying, please don't form what he called factions, political parties. Please don't do this, because we have this first-past-the-post, winner-take-all system. And you're going to end up with either the only a two-party system if we go into factions, if we become factions, or a system that is actually anti-democratic, where if you have 3, 4, 5 parties, then you'll end up with a situation where somebody with 11% of the vote can have 100% of the power. And it's just not democratic. And they couldn't figure out a solution to it in 1776 or in 1787 when they wrote the Constitution. They really struggled with this. It wasn't until the next century, until 1861, that John Stuart Mill invented the idea of proportional representation. And that was about the time that other countries of the world were looking at the American experiment, particularly after the Civil War, and we survived it, and they said, hey, this is really, this democracy thing is something we can try. And so they all went with John Stuart Mill's idea of proportional representation, and we and Greece and Australia have this, first pass. But Australia has fixed it with instant runoff voting. We've got a couple hundred communities in the United States that have done that, but at a national level we haven't. So Ralph says we need to become expert voters. We need to understand the process. Okay, Ralph, tell us about the process.
To refuse to be flattered, fooled, and flummoxed by polished politicians.
Oh, we can't be flattered, fooled, or flummoxed. by anybody who, by, yeah, okay, I'm not going to say what I'm thinking, and we'll just continue here.
And their parties. It's time for the American people to demand justice, which they deserve, and to demand better from their political system. It's time for the American people to reform the electoral process.
Yeah.
That effort is significantly strengthened today with my selection of Peter Camejo.
Oh, really? So, really? What did Peter Camejo have to say about this?
One of the problems we have in this election is a lot of people who agree with us, who agree with Ralph Nader, fear to vote for him because we don't have free elections. People are not free to vote for who they want. And the answer to the spoiler issue is so simple and straightforward. You have runoffs.
Yeah, you're right, Peter, but you're not going to get that from George Bush. And if you vote for Ralph and you're going to get George Bush. And, yeah, well, you know, they go on to say, well, and the Democrats are against instant runoff voting, too. And, yes, that's true. The Democratic Party has stymied a lot of efforts. And certainly at the national level has not taken up the baton. This is something that we, the people, need to be pushing from the grassroots. And it's one of the things that I think is so marvelous about the Green Party is that on a local level, all across the United States, they have gotten instant runoff voting laws passed. So IRV actually works in much of America. But we don't have it at the federal level. And I don't understand, frankly, why it is that progressives are continuing to send me emails and call into this show saying, how dare you not vote for Ralph Nader? And just exhibit this extraordinary ignorance of the American system. I don't get it. We got to educate folks. That's what we got to do. You and me. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. I'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive Magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work, offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find the sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to call in, share your thoughts, pick a fight, whatever you're up for, I'm ready. It's Billy from Santa Cruz here on the telephone with us. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Hey, Tom, let's fight.
Okay.
Before we start our fight, I want
you
to
pick the topic
about something.
Okay.
There's a movie called The Corporation.
Yeah, it's I've mentioned it a few times. I haven't seen it yet. It's doing very well in Canada right now, and it'll be playing in the United States in a month or two, I think.
No, it's here now, buddy.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, well, at least it's playing at our local art house here in Santa Cruz.
Okay, well, it hasn't made its way to Montpelier yet. It probably will in the next month or so.
It sounds like it's right up our alley.
Yeah, well, from what I've heard from people who have seen it, actually, maybe it played. Well, in any case, from what I've heard from people who've seen it, it basically lays out the same argument that I do in unequal protection. You know that the corporate form is a fine way to accumulate money, but if you're going to allow the corporate form to make social decisions, it's a psychopath.
Well, yeah, exactly. Once you let the corporation become a person, then you've really created an incredibly sick person.
Yeah, somebody. Well, you've created somebody who has one single purpose in life, which is
right.
To create profit.
Right. Well, and that's not to be that way is to be unbalanced.
Well, to be that way is to be
way of saying sick.
Yeah, or mentally ill. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's obsessive compulsive disorder carried to the extreme. But anyhow, sure.
Now let's talk about mental illness on a country level.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things that I want in my life. And some things are not worth the price I have to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that as a theme, I want to talk about two things. Number one, and that is Iraq. And number two, it's Nader.
Okay.
And I would suggest that both of those things, getting rid of Saddam, was sort of a nice-to-have idea. You know, my wife used to work for a corporation, and when things were tough, they would say, well, is that a nice-to-have or a have-to-have?
Right.
And in tough times, you only do the have-to-haves.
Right, especially if it involves having your young men and women die.
Well, I mean, that's the point. The fact is that it's really a good idea, in general, to have Saddam go away. But the way in which we did it is way too more expensive than the result.
Yeah.
We are paying more in treasure and in boys and girls' blood than it is worth it. It's not even close. And that's also true about Nader. You know, Nader's right when he says that our electoral system, our political system, is very sick, to use the old metaphor.
Yeah.
However, the fix that he suggests, which is his running at a time when George Bush is the guy who benefits from his running,
It's worse than a disease. I thought you were going to argue with me, Billy.
well, we'll find a way to argue before we're done.
Okay, we got a minute left here.
Isn't that it? In a nutshell, don't be so shallow, America, as to say, yeah, well, you know, don't you want, isn't it a good thing Saddam's gone? Well, you know, it'd be a good thing if the price wasn't so damn high.
Yeah, it'd be a good thing if...
And do I not want... Is not Nader... Nader is right about everything he says about our electoral system, with one exception, and that is, let's make it so horrible with Bush that we finally get a change.
Yeah, I wish he would go back to running things like Public Citizen and outing the outrageous behavior of this administration, the gutting of environmental regulations and standards, the destruction of our public schools, the crumbling of our infrastructure.
But that's not what's happening. I mean, the fact that he runs for office means he talks about that all the time.
I know.
Some of the real issues that he was effective on.
I know. It's like he's gone nuts. It's a tragedy. It's a national tragedy.
And it's about growing up. You see, for example, when I'm grown up, I make the right decisions. When I'm not grown up, I have ideas like this. You know, the way that they keep us beheading people.
Yeah, you got 5 seconds.
In the name of Islam.
Yeah.
I believe that every time they kill one man, we should destroy one mosque. And eventually, the Islamic people themselves will get on our side.
Well, I disagree with you there. But,
I know. There's
a
fight.
Okay. All righty. Thanks a lot, Billy. I appreciate the call. Do good. 29 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman with you.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Allegations that the Kroger company, owner of the Ralph's grocery store chain, illegally hired locked-out workers during a major strike in Southern California earlier this year may have merit. Kroger and the U.S. Justice Department both confirm an investigation has begun into the accusations, which reportedly involved hiring members of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union under the names and social security numbers of their children. This comes nearly half a year after the UFCW filed a lawsuit in a California court asking for the practice to be probed. That suit was dismissed as part of the strike settlement in February. But a grand jury is now hearing evidence collected so far, and Ralph's executives and store managers who took part in the scheme may face both state and federal criminal charges. In addition, if these claims can be proven, those workers who were locked out could receive back pay in the form of unemployment benefits denied during the dispute.
A Supreme Court ruling on Monday weakened state patient protection laws throughout the country. Two patients argued that Texas patient protection laws allowed them to pursue large lawsuits in their state court. Part of the suit was brought by a hysterectomy patient who claimed that Cigna Healthcare of Texas evicted her from a hospital after only one day. A doctor had recommended a longer stay, but the HMO refused to pay for it. The Supreme Court did not rule on whether she received appropriate care or not, simply stating that such lawsuits should be brought to the federal level.
Yesterday, the former chairman and CEO of media giant Vivendi Universal was arrested by French police. Jean-Marie Messier has been implicated in an investigation involving the manipulation of Vivendi's stock price, but he's yet to be formally charged. Also on Monday, Vivendi's video games unit announced it would lay off 350 people, more than one-third of its workforce, part of what it calls a division-wide restructuring.
Berkeley, California recently joined a growing list of cities with living wage ordinances designed to raise employees' salaries to match the actual cost of living. Opponents of the move argued before the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that living wage laws violate the U.S. Constitution's prohibition on legislative interference with valid contracts. But in a 2-1 ruling, the court disagreed.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Trouble's coming to the not-so-friendly skies. The Federal Aviation Administration is considering raising the retirement age of air traffic controllers to 56 because it predicts a major staffing crunch sometime during the next 9 years. Nearly half the controllers currently on the job will be able to retire by then. Ironically, many in this group are those who replaced the 12,000 air traffic controllers fired by Ronald Reagan in 1981 as part of his successful drive to break their union.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Maybe, but I don't think so. I still have hope. 27 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here back with you. Let me tell you why Billy's suggestion that every time the Islamic radicals behead somebody that we blow up a mosque would be counterproductive. Imagine if the right-wing Christian fundamentalists like Tim McVeigh, who, or this guy that they just arrested down in Texas about 3 months ago, you know, with his bomb-making factory and his weapons of mass destruction, were running around killing Muslims, for example. And, you know, pretty much everybody in America knows that these guys don't represent the majority of Christians. They certainly don't represent the majority of Americans. But, you know, I mean, even if you just wanted to identify them as Christians, everybody realizes that they don't represent, you know, they represent a very, very, very tiny fringe of Christianity. That fringe that advocates the use of violence to achieve religious ends. Okay? And there is that fringe is there, and it's real. And let's say that those guys were in other countries and they were, you know, committing crimes. And so those countries just started blowing up a church whenever one of these right-wing Christian extremists did something terrible. I, speaking as somebody who grew up going to church, and, you know, churches become communities, just as synagogues do, just as mosques do. And what would happen is not that the community would say, oh, no, those people are trying to teach us a lesson. We better learn that lesson. We better cut the cancer out from among us. But instead, they would become more insular, in my opinion. I think that what would happen is that you would see reactivity bubble up. All you have to do is look at what's happened in the United States since 9/11. You would see reactivity bubble up. You would see an aggressive posture. And so I think if we were to start bombing mosques whenever Islamic terrorists do crazed acts, that what we would do is we would turn the majority of Islam against us. Which, the majority of Islam is already suspicious of us. But I really think that most, I could be wrong. It depends on whose studies you're looking at. But I really think that most Muslims want to go to work. They want to have a job. They want their kids to go to school. They want to put food on the table. They want to have a decent life. They'd like to live in a country where they can vote for the people that are leading it. And they'd like to pursue their religion quietly in their own way. I think, and they may be suspicious of us. They may not even like us. But they're not terrorists. And I think it's true of all the major religions of the world. So I wouldn't do that. I just think that would be counterproductive. So anyhow, I guess I've finished my rant on Cameo. I want to just give you just a few more seconds of this is Peter Cameo, Ralph Nader's running mate now on Democracy in America, and you know his vision of it, and how to fix it.
You have run-ups all over America in local elections. Why don't we have them at the state and federal level?
Well, we don't because we haven't had enough of a grassroots action to bring it about. And keeping Republicans in power will virtually guarantee that won't happen.
This has been a conscious policy by the Democrats and Republicans not to allow the American people to be free to vote for alternative voices.
Yeah, I agree.
And in this election, the Democratic Party is mounting a campaign to try to keep Ralph Nader off the ballot.
As well they should.
And many of their spokespeople have come out and told Ralph Nader that he shouldn't run. They don't realize what they're saying.
They realize perfectly well what they're saying. See, this is, again, where Peter, it's like, San Francisco now has instant runoff voting. That's wonderful. Make it happen. Then run. But when you've got a two-party system, I mean, Teddy Roosevelt tried it with the Bull Moose Party. The Whigs tried it. It lasted for a little while and then died out. There have been a half a dozen now. I forget the names of all of them. There was, of course, the Reform Party. There was, what was John Anderson's party called? I forget. There have been all these third-party attempts, or maybe it was just an independent candidacy. There have been all of these attempts to stand as a third, in a third position in our electoral process, and they have always ended up shooting themselves in the foot because of the way our Constitution is organized, because of the way our election process
works.
It's not
Ralph Nader's whose rights they want to deny. It's the voters. The voters will decide who they want for president. And the desire of people to have their candidate, John Kerry, win because they don't prevent a name to be on the ballot that opposes the war and opposes the Patriot Act is a violation of the most fundamental concepts which the founders of this nation tried to promote.
Yeah, see, again, I agree with him, but, the founders just didn't have in their mind a better way to do it. They really didn't. I mean, they really did the best they could. You have to give them tremendous credit. I mean, creating the United States of America was, in my mind, an inspired act. I mean, however you want to define that, divinely inspired, brilliantly inspired, whatever. The evolution of civilization, call it what you want. It was brilliant. But it wasn't perfect, and this is one of the imperfections in it, is that it wasn't the most democratic of systems. Those have evolved since then, which is why virtually all of your European countries, for example, many of your South American countries, have more democratic systems. India have more democratic systems than we do here. And we can change that. We can change that. But until we change that, having Ralph out there. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Harry in Ann Arbor's on the line. Hey, Harry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello. I was listening to the news broadcast a little while ago, and the Republicans have evidently gotten religion. Wolfowitz, the number two man in the Pentagon, openly stated that the U.S. Army is going to be in Iraq for a long, long time.
Yeah, well, they broke it.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, they broke it, we own it. I mean, we broke it, we own it. It's Colin Powell was right.
No, that's the reason we went in there. We went in there because we needed a military base. We got Afghanistan on the right-hand side and Iraq on the left-hand side, so we can squeeze the other
yeah.
Iran and Syria and Saudi Arabia. We can squeeze them and make a democracy in Iraq, in the Near East, but it'll take 35, 40 years to do it.
Yeah, well, and democracy is not what's going to be the result of this. Mark my words.
Okay.
I mean, theocracy
is... Okay, we hope in 40 years from now...
Yeah, maybe 40 years from now. Yeah. Go ahead, Harry, I'm sorry.
We can have it. And an excellent bumper sticker for the next election is vote Nader 4 more years of Bush.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Harry.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you, and good to know that you're listening there on WSDS in Ann Arbor, Detroit, Ypsilanti, Michigan. And anyhow, I want to move along. We've heard enough of Peter Camejo. This is the real concern. You know, unless you want to, you know, rant about it some more. But here's the real conservative agenda: cheap labor. And suddenly, Hamid Karzai, the former Unocal executive and consultant who helped to try to negotiate the gas pipeline across Afghanistan back, you know, many years ago. And then, of course, the Taliban came in and said, no, you can't have your gas pipeline. And now Hamid Karzai, by coincidence, is the president of Afghanistan, the former Unocal guy. Anyhow, he has figured out what it is that the conservatives really want, beyond the pipeline, which is now being built, by the way. They really want cheap labor. So he comes and he says,
we have a young population. We have a population that's eager to work, and we have perhaps the least expensive labor in that part of the world.
Please come exploit us.
If you come and develop industry there, you will have labor that will be extremely cost effective.
Yes, you can get rid of all those unionized people in Grand Rapids and Ann Arbor and Northern California and New Mexico and Arizona and Southern Illinois and Ohio and Georgia.
So Afghanistan is a country of opportunity. Afghanistan is a trade man's, trade woman's country. Afghanistan is a trading place. Let's go there and trade and invest and make money and bring a great part of it back to the United States.
Oh, yeah, and bring it. You know, you're welcome to exploit our country. You're welcome to just, but please, leave us some crumbs. I mean, we understand that that's the conservative agenda, trickle down or trickle on economics. Please leave us some crumbs.
Keep a little of it there for us in Afghanistan.
Yeah, please let us keep a little of it there for us in Afghanistan. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Chris in Los Alamos, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey there. You know, I wanted to comment on something which I thought was really fascinating. You know, we've been talking about there really hasn't been anything resembling a democracy in the Middle East since the dawn of time. It's been mostly tribal economics and what have you. But, you know, following...
Well, actually, yes and no, if I may interrupt. The at the tribal level, you know, historically in the Middle East and all around the world, what you have are little tiny democracies, actually.
Right. I misspoke myself. I guess what I was trying to say is that following World War II, we had a very similar situation that MacArthur walked into in Japan, where they had never had a global democracy. It was obviously quite feudal, and yet we actually managed to instantiate something that resembles a pretty good democracy there, and where it had never existed before. And I just thought I would toss that, you know, your way for comment.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. Number one, see, here's the huge difference between World War II and what we did in Iraq. When the Japanese went to war, they went to war because their emperor, there was this literally a cult of emperor worship. The emperor was believed to be the incarnation of the god of the sun. You know, literally the first human came down from the sun, and that human gave birth to a child who gave birth to a child who became the lineage of the emperors of Japan. And this is still, you know, this is Shinto. This is still the religion of Japan.
Right.
And Tojo and his guys, you know, got the emperor going, and they, you know, Imperial Japan and they went nuts. I mean, you know, they went on this empire thing. You know, they had a feudal society for years and years and years in 1890, I forget the year.
Yeah.
When Admiral Perry parked his black ships off the coast, you know, and forced Japan to actually trade and involve themselves in commerce. And so there was that kind of opening to the West, but still it was largely a feudal society. But once they started getting involved in this, in this stuff, anyhow, they went nuts. They followed this cult of worshiping the emperor, and it led to things like, you know, suicide bombers, kamikaze pilots. Similarly, the Nazis followed the cult of, or the Germans followed the cult of the of Hitler, of Nazism, which he promoted as a new form of Christianity. He called it a new Christianity, quote unquote, and believed that this was actually going to bring about a kingdom of 1,000 years of peace. And I think a lot of average Germans really believed deep down inside, at least in the early years, that this guy had it right, and that they could achieve world peace if they would just be able to dominate these other pesky countries, and, you know, who had defeated them in World War I and were now trying to humiliate them, blah, blah, blah. So both of these countries were basically acting out of psychosis. And when we defeated them in World War II, the average person on the street kind of shook their head and woke up from that psychosis and said, whoa, we have been crazy. The Japanese were saying, look at what we did in Nanking, you know, the rape of Nanking. Look at the horrible war crimes. Look at the kamikaze. We were killing our own people for the end. We've gone nuts. And the Germans were looking around going, we've gone nuts. This was terrible. How could we have done this? And that's why, from the day of the end of World War II, VEDJ and VJ Day, those, you know, two dates, from those two dates until this day today, not one American has died as a result of hostile fire in Germany or Japan.
Yep.
Because both of those countries had contracted a thought virus which we burst. Now, in the Middle East, in Iraq, we go in and we say, you guys have weapons of mass destruction, you guys have terrorists, and we're going to come in and we're going to kill 20, 30,000 of your innocent civilians, not to mention your military, which were mostly conscripts, and we're going to impose democracy on you, and they're looking at us going, you guys are nuts.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just really the bottom line. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And that's why, you know, any parallels between World War II and Iraq just fall apart, Chris, because they're just worlds apart. But I appreciate the call, and thanks for giving me an opportunity to rant about it. 10 minutes before
the
hour.
Bye now.
Okay, bye now. 10 minutes before the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program. Stay tuned.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a 4-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. Add $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
Researchers in California study the fallout from a basically clean source of energy. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Some utility companies generate electricity at wind farms that use modern windmills and electric turbines. In general, this is a clean source of energy, but some wind farms kill a lot of birds every year, and no one knows for sure how that happens or how to stop it. Brian Walton runs a research group that studies predatory birds at the University of California in Santa Cruz. The research operation recently received a $2 million grant from the California Energy Commission to study bird mortalities at the state's wind farms. One large complex near San Francisco has 7,000 turbines, and hundreds of birds die there every year. The mortalities include about 50 golden eagles a year, and Walton says they're hard to explain.
You know, when you go through a wind farm and you find a dead eagle, it's very difficult to say if it landed on a telephone pole and got electrocuted, if it flew into a wire and broke its neck, or if it flew off of a wind turbine at night when the wind started blowing and crashed into the turbine and killed itself. All you do is find a dead bird.
Walton says scientists need to find specific causes for these mortalities to prevent them in the future.
You know, we all need power, and we're not going to have this industry go away. Nobody wants to suggest that. And ironically, the wind turbine is usually considered a green or, you know, positive energy thing. So everybody's trying to find a way to reduce the damage caused to predatory birds because it's generally considered ecologically a good thing.
Eagles and other predatory birds search for food while they soar on air currents. That means they often inhabit windy terrain that's also prime real estate for installations of wind turbines. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Tomas in Grand Rapids, Michigan's on the line. Hey, is it Tomas or Thomas?
You got it right the first time.
Tomas.
Brother, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Hey, thanks for the opportunity to be on your show. And I just wanted to continue on the thread of the third party thing because, you know, the war in Iraq is kind of in the news now and then, okay?
Yeah, kind of.
And both Kerry and Bush want to stay there for years,
mm-hmm.
All right? And the only guy that's going to be out there that wants to pull out is going to be the Green Party. And I just, you know, I think the people definitely need to show a protest vote if they want to. I mean, last time, I don't think it's right to blame the Green Party for Bush, because if the Democratic Party had just won Arkansas, okay, where President Clinton is from, You know, it would have been over.
Yeah, but see, Tomas, you're revealing an ignorance, no offense, of how the American system works. We only can have two parties. Otherwise, you're going to have a minority in charge of the country. You know, if you have two parties, you can have, you know, 51%. You could have a majority making the decision. You throw a third party in there, it's always going to be somebody who doesn't even represent half the people, who's going to, I mean, and also, don't you think that it's far more likely that John Kerry would get us out of Iraq than that George Bush would? Don't you think that he's a little more pragmatic? I mean, he's actually talked about, you know, getting Americans out of Iraq, internationalizing the thing, bringing in the other people from the other countries. George Bush is you know, only recently took John Kerry's advice and even started talking to the UN.
Well, I haven't heard. You know, it would be nice. First of all, I'm from the right wing, okay? So I don't want to pretend like I'm, you know, trying to snow you, okay? But I just in the year 2000, I was on Buchanan's bandwagon. Okay, that's how I went on. But I was mad, just like the people on Nader's side was mad, because they wouldn't let any of the Nader or Buchanan last time debate.
Right.
Remember that?
Yeah, I agree. You know, but I see. I think we have to have instant runoff voting first.
Well, you know, that's
and that's something you and I need to work at a grassroots level. You need to make it happen in Grand Rapids. I need to make it happen here in Vermont. And then we need to have, you know, at the state levels and then at the federal level. And then we can talk about having third and fourth and fifth party candidates at the federal level. And it'll be a legitimate debate and democracy will be well served. Tomas, thanks for the call. I got a boogie. It's the end of the hour. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Allegations that the Kroger company, owner of the Ralph's grocery store chain, illegally hired locked-out workers during a major strike in Southern California earlier this year may have merit. Kroger and the U.S. Justice Department both confirm an investigation has begun into the accusations, which reportedly involved hiring members of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union under the names and social security numbers of their children. This comes nearly half a year after the UFCW filed a lawsuit in a California court asking for the practice to be probed. That suit was dismissed as part of the strike settlement in February. But a grand jury is now hearing evidence collected so far, and Ralph's executives and store managers who took part in the scheme may face both state and federal criminal charges. In addition, if these claims can be proven, those workers who were locked out could receive back pay in the form of unemployment benefits denied during the dispute.
A Supreme Court ruling on Monday weakened state patient protection laws throughout the country. Two patients argued that Texas patient protection laws allowed them to pursue large lawsuits in their state court. Part of the suit was brought by a hysterectomy patient who claimed that Cigna Healthcare of Texas evicted her from a hospital after only one day. A doctor had recommended a longer stay, but the HMO refused to pay for it. The Supreme Court did not rule on whether she received appropriate care or not, simply stating that such lawsuits should be brought to the federal level.
Yesterday, the former chairman and CEO of media giant Vivendi Universal was arrested by French police. Jean-Marie Messier has been implicated in an investigation involving the manipulation of Vivendi's stock price, but he's yet to be formally charged. Also on Monday, Vivendi's video games unit announced it would lay off 350 people, more than one-third of its workforce, part of what it calls a division-wide restructuring.
Berkeley, California, recently joined a growing list of cities with living wage ordinances designed to raise employees' salaries to match the actual cost of living. Opponents of the move argued before the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that living wage laws violate the U.S. Constitution's prohibition on legislative interference with valid contracts. But in a 2-1 ruling, the court disagreed.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Trouble's coming to the not-so-friendly skies. The Federal Aviation Administration is considering raising the retirement age of air traffic controllers to 56 because it predicts a major staffing crunch sometime during the next 9 years. Nearly half the controllers currently on the job will be able to retire by then. Ironically, many in this group are those who replaced the 12,000 air traffic controllers fired by Ronald Reagan in 1981 as part of his successful drive to break their union.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Martha Stewart has a plan. Of course she has a plan. The multi-million-dollar maven of how to live the affluent lifestyle always has a plan. Whether it's a plan for gold-leafing walnut shells to use as individual caviar cups at your next dinner party, or a plan to dump her shares of M-Clone Inc. just before the price crashed, Martha is always ready. As she approaches the prospect of spending a bit of time in the federal pokey for her conviction in that insider stock dumping scheme, she already has a plan to lighten her jail term. She's proposed that she get good time credit, thus shortening her sentence, by helping underprivileged women. How? By cleaning their apartments? Sewing new clothes for their children? No, no, darling. By teaching poor women how to start their own businesses. One wonders, will her course include an ethics lecture? After her term, Martha might follow the path blazed by Walter Pavlo. A former top executive of MCI, he spent a year and a half in prison after being convicted of wire fraud and money laundering. With an outside partner, it seems that Walter had devised a convoluted accounting scheme so he could loot $6 million from MCI customers. Bad boy. But being bad, at least for white-collar criminals, can put you in demand on the corporate lecture circuit. Ex-con Walter, for example, was recently the featured speaker at UC Berkeley's Center for Responsible Business. Walter pulls down $5,000 a speech and expects to take in up to $200,000 this year, telling audiences just how bad he was. There's even a speakers bureau called Pros and Cons that specializes in marketing such corporate crime confessors as Walter. I'm sure they'd welcome Martha. This is Jim Hightower saying, the lesson here is clear. If you're going to be a criminal, be a white-collar one. The after-prison gigs are a lot better.
As a small business owner, you turn multitasking into a fine art. Because for you, doing several things all at the same time is just another day at the office. So who better than you to appreciate how Sam's Club offers the option of doing two things at once. Buying items you need for your business, while at the same time buying items you need for your home. In addition to finding what you need for your business, you'll find name brand electronics, sporting goods, and fine jewelry, as well as many of the everyday essentials every home needs. When you shop at Sam's Club, you get the same everyday low costs on items for your home as you do on items for your business. And when you're really pressed for time, try using Click and Pull and Fax and Pull, convenient services to help you order ahead for fast pickup. Place your order at samsclub.com or by fax before 5 p.m. And at no extra charge, it's ready to pick up the next morning. You've got a lot going on. Count on us to help you get it done. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 7 minutes after the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. One of the folks in our chat room, which you get to from TomHartman.com, also leads to our message board, where there's a continuous discussion going on of various kinds. Anyhow, one of the folks in our chat room makes the comment, you can get more truth on Jon Stewart's fake news show, that being the Daily Show, than with the mainstream media. And I don't know if you saw it last night, but I think they replay it at 7 p.m. Eastern time anyway on the Comedy Channel for Comedy Central or whatever it is. You can see last night's show tonight if you missed it, but... I'm not usually one to sit here and plug a TV show, but anyhow, he had the video clip from Ashcroft or from Dick Cheney on Sunday, talking to one of the reporters, I forget her name, and she says, well, Mr. Cheney, you said that there was a close operational connection between Al Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. And he goes, no, I never said that. I never said that. I definitely never. She says, no, I thought you. He says, nope, I never said that. And then Jon Stewart flashes to the clip from a year earlier on Meet the Press where Dick Cheney says,
and we've discovered there's a close operational connection between Al Qaeda and Saddam Hussein.
Or words to that effect. And Jon Stewart did it great. He did it funny. But why didn't CBS News do it? Why not ABC? What's wrong with NBC? The truth tellers in our culture, I fear, are becoming fewer and fewer. Some Medco employees have a bitter pill to swallow. This from TheStreet.com, a financial newsletter. 900 workers, nearly 7% of the company's staff, learned on Friday that they will soon lose their jobs. Medco spokeswoman Soraya Rodriguez-Balzac described the action as a difficult decision that will nonetheless enhance the efficiency of the company's overall operations. I don't know if you remember, but I remember a time 20 years ago or more when a company laid off people and everybody thought, oh, something's wrong, and their stock price fell. Well, Medco is the target of a federal whistleblower lawsuit that accuses the company of, among other things, destroying prescriptions and favoring expensive drugs manufactured by its former parent company, Merck. They paid $29 million. To settle such allegations in 20 different states. Can you imagine if you committed a crime in 20 different states? Say you stuck up 7-Elevens in 20 different states to the tune of $29 million. Do you think they'd let you stick around? Anyhow, Rodriguez-Balzac dismissed any connection between the layoffs and lost business. An employee, however, on the union message board wrote, enough of us know why they left us. The employee went on to say that Medco has changed dramatically for the worse over the years. And see, this is what I, what I keep talking about. The change in corporate culture
and the change in American culture, really, as the result of the pervasiveness of these very ultimately anti-democratic, very toxic, very aristocratic, autocratic, plutocratic, conservative worldviews. Anyhow, the long and short of it, quoting from the employee bulletin board, the long and short of it is that this is not the same company I came to work for long ago, and not the same leadership that we had respect for back in that day. It's not the same business we built and loved. Medco instead employs a business model that they say places profits above patient safety, not to mention above employees. And on the news of the layoffs, Medco's stock jumped 2.9%. Up! Went up! Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. It's interesting times we live in. Strange times. The chairman of the 9/11 Commission on Sunday said that Al-Qaeda had much more interaction with Iran and Pakistan. See, this war of words is continuing between the administration and the commission. And the commission, now you've got Lee Hamilton, the Democrat, who's the number two guy, is trying to like make peace with the administration by telling the truth in a way that he thinks will be acceptable to the administration. But he doesn't get it that Cheney and Bush are bent on having people believe a lie. And in order to have people believe that lie, and that is that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11, and therefore the lives of over 800 of our young men and women were not lost in vain, and $200 billion of our treasure was not wasted. That if people will believe that, then they will go along with that. And so anyhow, the chairman, he says, hey, you want a country that had contacts with Al-Qaeda? Iran had more contacts with them. Pakistan had more contacts with them. And there was actually collaboration in those countries. The report, this is the Associated Press story here, the report released last week said there were contacts between Osama bin Laden's network and the Iraqi government, but they did not appear to have produced a collaborative relationship. I find it frankly shocking, said Michigan's Carl Levin, that the exaggerations of the administration before the war relative to that connection continue to this day. Well, they've either got to say, as the New York Times 3 days ago, 4 days ago, called for an apology. They said this administration owes the American people an apology. They either have to say we were wrong, we're sorry, or they have to keep trying to, push the lie. Those are really, politically, there are only two options. And realistically, I suppose. And as we saw with Bill Clinton, owning up to the truth, particularly when it's a difficult or an embarrassing truth, is not something that people, particularly in the public eye, want to do. This is human nature. So here we have the commission's vice chairman, former Democratic Representative Lee Hamilton of Indiana, said the White House and the commission agree on a central point, that there was no evidence of a collaborative relationship between Al-Qaeda and Iraq in the September 11 attacks in the United States. Okay, so he's trying to say, he's parsing his words very carefully, saying the administration, the Bush administration, they're not saying that there was evidence of a collaboration between Saddam and Osama, or that had anything to do with 9/11. But that's not going to be good enough. Cheney's going to keep this thing churning. The right wingers, the right wing spin machine, it's going to keep it going. Now we've got a question. Apparently, when Bush and Cheney testified together, holding hands before the commissioners, the question about who gave the order to shoot down the fourth airliner came up. and Cheney had given the order, and the record is clear that that was the fact. And they said, well, Cheney did it, but he checked with Bush first. And Newsweek is now reporting that, in fact, that's not what happened, that Cheney simply took charge. Oddly, the vice president is not part of the military chain of command. Again, a lot of people haven't bothered to read the Constitution. The Secretary of Defense presumably would be the one who would be making that kind of a decision, or the Secretary of State, or, you know, Homeland Security in the modern era, or perhaps the Speaker of the House. I mean, if you want to talk about secession. And can you imagine, you know, Jack Kennedy during the Cuban Missile Crisis turning to Lyndon Johnson and saying, Lyndon, why don't you take over for a little while? I'm going to go fly around the country. Or Richard Nixon saying it to Spiro Agnew. I'm sorry, I just can't. It's beyond me. But anyhow, the administration continues. You know, Bush says, quote, this administration never said the 9/11 attacks were orchestrated between Saddam and al-Qaeda. We did say there were numerous contacts between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. See, there you go again. A commentator, Jim Loeb, writer for the Asia Times, says, when I was 15 and I kept asking Mary Beth for a date and she would always politely refuse, I think it would have been hard put. I would have been hard put to describe that as a relationship as much as I wanted to brag about one. He's actually quoting a congressional aide. So, you know, but according to Bush, it's a relationship. His March 19th letter, in fact, George Bush's March 19th, 2003 letter to Congress, officially informing it that hostilities had begun, asserted that the war was permitted under legislation authorizing force against those who, quote, now keep in mind, when Bush invaded Iraq, this is the letter he sent to Congress. He said he was doing it under legislation that authorized attacks, authorized force against those who planned, authorized, committed, or aided the terrorist attacks that occurred on September 11, 2001. That was the official reason given to Congress. You know, required to be given to Congress under the law that was passed. Rumsfeld continues his rants. Rumsfeld's angry admonitions against the dangers of media coverage of torture and abuse in U.S. prisons came at a press conference in which he admitted that at least one, and actually there's 13 of these ghost detainees that Human Rights Watch has identified, had been kept off the prison rosters for 7 months. Why? To keep the Red Cross from finding out about them. This is a war crime, my friends. I mean, shouldn't we be embarrassed, worried, humiliated, concerned? There's a clear violation of Article 75 of the Fourth Geneva Convention. We wouldn't let them, we prosecuted Nazis for this kind of stuff. Pressed by the White House, the Republican leadership in Congress prevented Democratic lawmakers from issuing subpoenas for some of the administration's memoranda on its interrogation and detention policies. Now, we're not even going to let you know about it. Tom Hartman, 20 minutes after.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartmann. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartmann, in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
My answer is bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartmann Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Riding around in my Hummer, I never feel insecure. Everybody knows just where I stand on blood and guts and gore. And since I have to buy more gas every 10 miles or so, I sure am glad we got Iraqi oil to keep me on the go.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. You've been hearing all the Reichwingers ranting and raving about the UN mismanagement of the Iraqi oil fund. Well, it looks like what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Let me tell you let me tell you about that right after we take a call here. 1-866-889-8894. Chuck in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
You know, I was listening to Congressman Sanders on your show a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
And he took a call where, you know, somebody was saying we should try impeachment, and Congressman Sanders says, well, it's never going to work, and what we really need to do is vote this guy out of office in November. But it occurs to me what we need to do, I think, as a nation, even though we will lose because obviously the Republicans control the House and the Senate, is for moral reasons attempt an impeachment.
It's been done. There is a bill of impeachment that has been presented in the House of Representatives, and it has a number of co-sponsors, and it will never make its way out of committee. It'll never make its way to the floor. Yeah, it's been done. I forget who introduced it.
I agree, but you know, it seems to me that at least someone could walk out on the floor, and I know that the Congress can do this, and on C-SPAN 1, if nothing else, they can say to the American people, and not so much to the American people, but you know, geez, Tom, I mean to the rest of the world, that there are people in America that disagree with this.
But Chuck, I think that that's already happened. I may be wrong, but I thought it was Charlie Rangel. I'm quite sure I'll have to check into it. But my recollection is that this happened like 6 months ago.
Yeah, please do, because to tell you the truth, I tend to follow C-SPAN, and I never saw that. I could have missed it. But
well, I don't know that it was on C-SPAN. You know, I don't know that it ever got covered, but or it would be covered. I mean, members of the House do have an opportunity to speak. I agree with you that there should, you know, that we should be speaking out, and that our elected representatives should be speaking out. And I'd like to see Bernie, as my representative, I'd like to see him get up on the House floor and take these guys apart and say, you know, that they should be impeached.
Absolutely, because even if it doesn't work, at least we've made a statement to the rest of the world that there are those of us here in America that disagree with this.
I don't disagree. I think his point is, you know, he's a little more moderate, perhaps, than you and I are in some regards. I think he's a little more radical than we are in some regards, but that he just figured that doing something like that would end up, you know, just causing such a reaction, such a backlash, that it might be counterproductive. You'd end up with people going, oh, it's just for politics, you know, as there was this backlash against the Clinton impeachment.
Well, that's certainly true. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, who knows? I think that... you know, beyond impeachment, just, you know, standing up and speaking the truth is really important stuff.
I guess that's what I'm asking for. And I call Tom Udall, who's my representative, on a fairly regular basis. They just say something, anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eventually it's even if you are almost censored by the conventional media, something will get out.
Yeah. And what kind of response do you get from Udall's office?
Pretty much, well, we're being moderate, and we think we need to vote him out. And I just, you know, I guess, like you said, I'm a little more radical than that.
Yeah. See, I think the impeachment stuff plays well to the base. It plays well to people like you and me, but we're probably 10, 12, 15, maybe 20% of the voters.
Yeah,
and what's important right now is to reach that middle ground that don't pay such careful attention to politics and that aren't as radicalized as we are, because they haven't been really paying attention. And I don't think you're going to reach them with that kind of rhetoric.
No, you're absolutely right, Tom. My sense is that there's going to be, as they always say, an after the war. And we're going to have to build fences back with the Russian Republic, with the French, with the Germans, and everybody else on this planet at some point in time. And I think just coming out and stating that there are, you know, as Nixon used to say, a silent majority, maybe, or at least a silent minority, that disagree with this nonsense would maybe help.
Well, I think that that's the subtext to what John Kerry is saying, what the Democrats are saying. But, yeah, I agree it should be more explicit. Thanks a lot for the call, Chuck. Good to hear
Thank
from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Allegations that the Kroger company, owner of the Ralph's grocery store chain, illegally hired locked-out workers during a major strike in Southern California earlier this year may have merit. Kroger and the U.S. Justice Department both confirm an investigation has begun into the accusations, which reportedly involved hiring members of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union under the names and social security numbers of their children. This comes nearly half a year after the UFCW filed a lawsuit in a California court asking for the practice to be probed. That suit was dismissed as part of the strike settlement in February. But a grand jury is now hearing evidence collected so far, and Ralph's executives and store managers who took part in the scheme may face both state and federal criminal charges. In addition, if these claims can be proven, those workers who were locked out could receive back pay in the form of unemployment benefits denied during the dispute.
A Supreme Court ruling on Monday weakened state patient protection laws throughout the country. Two patients argued that Texas patient protection laws allowed them to pursue large lawsuits in their state court. Part of the suit was brought by a hysterectomy patient who claimed that Cigna Healthcare of Texas evicted her from a hospital after only one day. A doctor had recommended a longer stay, but the HMO refused to pay for it. The Supreme Court did not rule on whether she received appropriate care or not, simply stating that such lawsuits should be brought to the federal level.
Yesterday, the former chairman and CEO of media giant Vivendi Universal was arrested by French police. Jean-Marie Messier has been implicated in an investigation involving the manipulation of Vivendi's stock price, but he's yet to be formally charged. Also on Monday, Vivendi's video games unit announced it would lay off 350 people, more than one-third of its workforce, part of what it calls a division-wide restructuring.
Berkeley, California recently joined a growing list of cities with living wage ordinances designed to raise employees' salaries to match the actual cost of living. Opponents of the move argued before the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that living wage laws violate the U.S. Constitution's prohibition on legislative interference with valid contracts. But in a 2-1 ruling, the court disagreed.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Trouble's coming to the not-so-friendly skies. The Federal Aviation Administration is considering raising the retirement age of air traffic controllers to 56 because it predicts a major staffing crunch sometime during the next 9 years. Nearly half the controllers currently on the job will be able to retire by then. Ironically, many in this group are those who replaced the 12,000 air traffic controllers fired by Ronald Reagan in 1981 as part of his successful drive to break their union.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, in the good for the goose, good for the gander department, United Nations mandated auditors have sharply criticized the U.S. Occupation Authority. This is the Coalition Provisional Authority, the CPA. Have sharply criticized them for the way they have spent more than $11 billion in Iraqi oil revenues. And say that whenever they go to the coalition people who are responsible for spending this $11 billion, they get, quote, resistance, end quote, when they ask questions about where'd the money go, what's going on. And in an interim report, this is from the Financial Times, which is, by the way, sort of like the Wall Street Journal of England. I mean, it's a very conservative economic publication. In an interim report obtained by the Financial Times, KPMG says the Development Fund for Iraq, which is managed by the U.S.-led Coalition Provisional Authority and channels oil revenue into reconstruction projects, is, quote, open to fraudulent acts. The findings come after U.S. complaints about the U.N. administration of the Oil for Food program under Saddam Hussein. I'm sure you've heard about that on right-wing radio. You won't hear about this in all probability. Some of KPMG's most damning criticisms were of the State Organization for Marketing Oil, responsible for the sale of Iraq's most crucial asset, Oil sales, which go into the U.S.-controlled fund, have topped $10 billion since the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. Now, you remember when we were told by good old Wolfie that, you know, Iraq can generate $2, $3 billion a year in oil revenue, maybe even more, and that's certainly going to be more than the war in Iraq is going to cost. This will be a self-financing thing. Don't worry about it. Remember that? I think, you know, our quote for the day here is an appropriate one from President Dwight D. Eisenhower, April 16, 1953. Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies in the final sense a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed. The theft in this case is by the Bush administration and its huge corporate cronies, the vast majority, not the vast majority, some 60 to 70% of this money has gone, you know, directly to military. Well, actually, the vast majority of it, yeah, I'll stand behind that. The vast majority of the money that we have spent in Iraq is ending up in the hands of U.S. military, U.S. corporations. A lot of it is going through the Pentagon. You know, they need to buy new bombs, they need to buy new bullets, they need to buy new ammunition, they need to buy new, you know, Humvees, whatever. And a lot of it is going directly to companies like Halliburton and Bechtel that are doing the reconstruction. So far, the cost, since the invasion, and this according to the Congressional Budget Office, these, you know, pretty clean statistics, as of this moment, $879,000. The clock keeps ticking. Anyhow, it's $119 billion. By the time probably I finish the next sentence, it'll be $119,120,000,000. There we go. Now, what could that buy? What could that buy? Well, some time ago, when Bush was just asking for $87 billion, which is only, what, two-thirds of that, roughly? Three-quarters, maybe? Yeah, it's more like three-quarters. This little email got circulated, which I believe originated with Michael Moore. According to the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, $87 billion is more than the combined total of all state budget deficits in the United States. The Bush administration proposed absolutely zero funds to help states deal with these deficits, despite the fact that it was the tax cuts, in large part, that created the deficits, because most states indexed their state income tax to federal taxes. $87 billion, more than the combined total of all the state budget deficits in the United States, which are substantial. $87 billion is enough to pay the 3.3 million people who have lost jobs under George Bush, $26,363,000 each. The unemployment benefits extension passed by Congress at the beginning of this year provides zero benefits to workers who exhausted their regular state unemployment benefits and cannot find work. $87 billion is more than double the total amount the government spends on Homeland Security. Double. The U.S. spends about $36 billion on Homeland Security, although Senator Warren Rudman, Republican of New Hampshire, wrote that America will fall approximately $98.4 billion short of meeting critical emergency responder needs for Homeland Security without a funding increase. $87 billion is 87 times the amount the federal government spends on after-school programs. George W. Bush proposed a budget that reduces the $1 billion for after-school programs to only $600 million, cutting off about 475,000 children from various after-school programs. And $87 billion is more than 10 times what the government spends on all environmental protection. The Bush administration requested just $7.6 billion for the entire EPA. This, of course, including a 32% cut to water quality grants, a 6% reduction in enforcement staff, and a 50% cut to conservation and land acquisition. Well, that was 87 when it was 87 billion. Now it's 119 billion, 120 million, 202,734 dollars. That would be the equivalent. That would be enough money to have paid for 16,841,542 children to attend a year of Head Start. 16,800,000 children could attend a year of Head Start for the amount of money. It would be enough money, the amount that we've already spent in Iraq on this mad war. You know, the George III, he's the third George to rule America, right? George Washington, George Bush first, George Bush, George III. Why is it George III's are always crazed, right? The number of children who could have been insured for one full year for the amount we've spent so far in Iraq is 51,058,853. In terms of its impact on public education, the $119 billion we've spent so far would be enough to hire, for one year, 2,268,958 public school teachers. We could have hired 2.2 million more teachers. You want small classrooms? You want kids who are performing well? The $119 billion that we've spent so far could have paid for 3 million four-year scholarships at public universities for students. That's a full 4 years. 3 million of our young people could have gone to college for full 4 years at public universities. They couldn't do it at Harvard, but they could do it at the University of Michigan. Or Michigan State. 1,701,000 units of public housing could have been built for that $119 billion. I'm kind of ambivalent about public housing. I tend to agree with the notion that I think William Kristol, the famous conservative, made that nobody in the history of the world has ever washed a rented car. I have some concerns about subsidized housing, but I think that it's a very, very good idea for us to build housing and give people the ability to own it. And then if they want to sell it and become homeless or whatever, you know, let them make their choices. But that's a whole other discussion. Over 1,700,000 houses could have been built for the money that we've spent in Iraq. In terms of our impact on the world, we could have fed every person on the planet for 4 years. All the hungry people on the planet for a full 4 years. In terms of the AIDS epidemic, we could have fully funded the worldwide AIDS programs for 11 years with the money we've spent so far in Iraq. And in terms of immunizations, with the $119 billion we've spent in Iraq so far, we could have ensured that every child in the world, born over the next 39 years, received full immunizations throughout their lifetime. What are we doing? It is the madness of George III. It is just, I can come up with no other way to explain it. It's the madness of George III. It's
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator. You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, not you. Okay, the I don't know if you saw this thing, the tobacco buyout. This in the Washington Post this morning, they're talking about this. The Ken Cook, who is the head of the Environmental Working Group, had to go and sue under the Freedom of Information Act to find this out. But the cons have said, let's take $9.6 billion. $9.6 billion. Now, keep in mind, you know, the tobacco companies are doing pretty well these days. They're making hundreds of millions, billions in profits. Yeah, they've taken a few hits, a few lawsuits they've paid out. But they, you know, they just raise the prices. I mean, it's five times more addictive than heroin. Tobacco companies are doing just fine. But increasingly what's happening is they're buying their tobacco overseas where it's cheaper. And consumption of tobacco in the United States has declined somewhat over the last 15 years. Although worldwide, sales of tobacco are actually up because the tobacco companies are aggressively marketing in the third world. It's very fashionable now to smoke in India and China and Africa and parts of Southeast Asia, parts of South America. Most countries don't have laws against advertising or giving away free samples of cigarettes to children, for example. So anyhow, there's, you know, less tobacco being grown in the United States, and so the tobacco industry came to Congress and said, well, why don't you give us $9.6 billion because we're taking this land out of tobacco production. We're going to have to grow something else. Make the transition easy for us. Now, if it was if it was thousands and thousands of small tobacco farmers, and they had to go through a wrenching transition, apparently tobacco renders the soil. You know, you got to put a lot of chemicals and stuff to grow tobacco, and it takes a year or so for the soil to recover. And for any crop, any kind of major change. And if this was a lot of small farmers, and this is the way it was marketed, I mean, you know, the American people were told, hey, there's all these small tobacco farmers. We need to take $9.6 billion, you know, enough money to hire thousands, tens of thousands of teachers, or whatever. I mean, you know, you can extrapolate from the list we just went through. We need to take $9.6 billion and give it to these tobacco farmers. So this guy, Ken Cook, sues under the Freedom of Information Act and says, okay, where is this money going? And more than two-thirds of the $9.6 billion approved by the House would go to only 10% of the peoples and companies eligible for any compensation, according to a study by the Environmental Working Group. In fact, the study shows the overwhelming majority of recipients, now these are the small farmers, 354,000 of the 437,000 total eligible, would collect only $1,000 a year over the next 5 years. And a few very large tobacco companies are going to get lots of billions of dollars. What a surprise. And finally, in the cracks showing department, the evangelical leaders re-examine principles. A draft, this from the Los Angeles Times, the National Association of Evangelicals. Now, these are the conservatives within the Christian movement, by and large. The National Association of Evangelicals, even to the right, I would say, of the Baptists in many regards, is circulating a draft of a groundbreaking framework for political action that strongly endorses social and economic justice and warns against close alignment with any political party. See, they're saying, you know, what Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson are doing is the opposite of what Jesus said to do, you know, when he said, you know, render unto Caesar what's Caesar's and give to God what's God's. You know, in other words, divide church and state. It affirms a religiously based commitment to government protections for the poor, the sick, and disabled, including fair wages, health care, nutrition, and education. It declares that Christians have a sacred responsibility to protect the environment. What's the world coming to? I think it's a marvelous thing. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. Truth and common sense in broadcasting.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. Its clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of CarboBlocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Communities and individuals improvise to fill an environmental void left by the federal government. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Gus Speth says we need action on a long list of environmental problems, but he claims the federal government has turned its back on environmental protection. Speth was an advisor to the Carter and Clinton administrations, and he's written a new book called Red Sky at Morning. He says most progress on environmental issues is being made by individuals, companies, and nonprofit groups. Speth compares their actions to musicians playing jazz.
Jazz initiatives are initiatives that people take spontaneously, voluntarily. They're bottom-up. They're not being imposed. They're improvisational. And people are doing things. Individuals, the green consumer movement is beginning to strengthen and take off. Certification of forest products and fishery products happening. Despite the fact that governments are not involved at all, it's the companies are doing it, the environmental community is pushing it, and it's beginning to take off.
Speth sees these so-called jazz initiatives in almost every walk of life. For example, the Alcoa Corporation is aggressively reducing its greenhouse gas emissions. A number of religious denominations are talking to their members about the environment. And Chicago has declared its intention to become the greenest city in the United States.
This country is acting. It's just acting at a personal level and a community level and an organizational level. It's not acting at the federal government yet, but if we keep promoting this jazz, one day it will sweep the country.
Speth says jazz initiatives offer a lot of promise for bringing about change, but he says many environmental problems are simply too big. They require the concerted effort of federal policy and regulation. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Yes, indeed. When we're talking about war, we're really talking about peace. Yeah, four minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. See, I just want to wrap this thing up that I started with this thing about evangelicals. It's interesting. Most Jews that I know understand that there's this concept of tikkun olam, you know, that you are born with an obligation to heal the world. Most Christians that I know, however, And I think that that's why there's a long history of social activism within Judaism, and similarly within Islam, you find the obligation to heal and help others, help the poor, feed the hungry, things like that. But I think most Christians aren't aware of the fact that there's only one place in the Bible where Jesus actually says, "Here's how you can get into heaven." It's in Matthew 25. It's the only place in the Bible. And he lays it out. He says, "You feed the poor." He says, "You're only going to go if you fed me when you saw me hungry, if you clothed me when you saw me naked, if you took care of me when you saw me sick, if you visited me when I was in prison, and if you took me in when I was a stranger." And they say to him, "But you know, you've never been any of those things." And he says, "As you do it to the least of these among us, you do it to me." All right, that's it. And this is the conundrum that the folks like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson sitting around saying that 9/11 is God's retribution for America allowing homosexuality and, you know, justifying wars, going back to the Pope and the Crusades. This is the conundrum that they have. And I think that the evangelicals are starting to face up to this. I mean, this association represents 52 denominations and independent churches. Leaders include Billy Graham, Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, and T.D. Jakes. But the framework before the National Association looks beyond charities and declares that evangelicals and the government must look at the underlying government policies and economic practices that institutionalize poverty and injustice. Here's a quote from the draft. "When social structures result in such gross disparities and suffering, the Bible writers envision structural solutions such as periodic land redistribution so that everyone can have access to productive resources." They're calling for a jubilee. It's amazing. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Adam Cohen for engineering it. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to Ben Birch for getting us up on White Rose Society, our archives out there, and the folks at Cable Radio Network for streaming us. Thanks to our sponsors, especially Small Dog Electronics and the folks in our chat room who dropped by and spent the afternoon with us. And thanks especially to you for listening. See you again tomorrow. Same time, same place. Tom Hartman here.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system